This is a big deal. We are talking about people who pay to play. You're making rules because of what you see based on people who get paid to play that impact the people who pay to play. That's a bad decision.
I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Hello, this is Alan Shipnuck back for another Fire Drill podcast. It's a big day in golf with the rollback announcement by the USGA. There's a lot to talk about. We've convened an all-star panel of Matt Janella and Michael Bamberger. We're hoping to get esteemed architect and thinker Michael Clayton. He was supposed to be here now. He may buzz in at any moment. We'll patch him through. But there's a lot to talk about. Real quick, before we get to the news of the day and what it means, Matt, why don't you tip your cap to our corporate sponsors here?
Oh, I mean, you know, you've heard it before if you listen to this podcast, but obviously Link Soul and that lifestyle brand that I'm proud to be affiliated with and to wear it, you know, on and off the golf course. Go to linksoul.com, use FirePit25 for 25% off your next purchase of all Link Soul gear. I'm especially fond of the flat brims and the hoodies, regardless of my age. And Dormy Workshop, the company that does fine leather goods and does our head covers and anything else that we make made of leather. They're just simply, in my opinion, the best in the business. And we also have a promo code FIREPIT15 for 15% off your next purchase on dormyworkshop.com.
Awesome. All right, let's get to it. There's a lot to talk about here. And Michael, you wrote a very thoughtful piece for firepitcollective.com, staking out a little bit of a middle ground that the rollback was necessary, but it's not going to have a cataclysmic effect on all of us. Now that it's here, now that it's official, what does this mean for the professional game and then for guys like us?
Uncharacteristically, Alan, you understate. I think it'll have no impact on us, the three of us on this conversation. And literally, I think let's say there's 60 million golfers, literally 59.99 million golfers. It will have no effect. You'll never know the difference. Just like I would say for the three of us, if you give us a top flight in a Pro V1, we can barely tell the difference in terms of distance, in terms of click and everything else. So I think, but in terms of what they really wanted to do to have an impact on the best golfers in the world and make, I think this is their real goal, make classic golf courses still meaningful, have meaningful par fives and the rest, 13th at Augusta National and many other examples. I don't think it's going to do it at all.
I mean, Matt, your point is if they're going to do it, they didn't go far enough, right? They should have rolled it back more if they were going to do it.
To Michael's point, why are we going through this? What is actually happening right now? What is being done? What just got announced in 2023 that's going to go to effect in 2020? Like none of this, you know, makes any sense to me. So I'm just not, you know, it's such a small percentage of people that it's apparently going to impact, but then it's also eventually going to impact some of us. But by the time we get to 2030, I'm already dealing with rollback. It's called age. Like everybody's going through it. Tiger Woods is going through it. Phil Mickelson is fighting the fight of being able to actually still say he hits bombs. Like the longest hitters aren't winning or dominating. They're playing a different brand of golf. There's, you know, none of this. Is it that 150th Open that we were there at St. Andrews in which guys were driving the 18th with a 3-wood in, you know, burnt out conditions in a summer stretch of time in Scotland in which the fairways were rolling faster than the greens? Was that so optically unsettling to them that they were like, that's it, we have to do it? What is going on right now?
I mean, I think the answer And Mike Wan has said this in sort of a sensible way, is we had to do something. We can't do nothing, because if you project 7 years from now, when guys are driving at 370, 380, 390, 400, whatever the norm was going to become if it went completely unchecked, like they had to draw the proverbial line in the sand. And maybe this is just the opening salvo. If the USGA had come and said, we're going to roll it back 25%, for the pros, or 30%, there would have been mutiny and anarchy. We're already sort of seeing that a little bit, but maybe they start with this rollback and then they keep dialing it back a little bit more, so the old courses and the Marions and those courses can be relevant again. I don't know that to be true, but I think they had to set some kind of precedent that we're still the sheriff of this game, that we still need a little bit of law and order. And you know, there's that legal term, splitting the baby, where you kind of come to a compromise. It's not really satisfactory to either side. It's a little bit like that. It wasn't enough of a rollback, but it's something. And everybody's mad, but at least they've started the governance process. So that would be my answer to your question, is what is happening, is they had to start somewhere, and this is where they started. This may not be the end.
Matt, what have you done with Alan Shipnuck out there on the West Coast? When did it get so measured and reasonable? This is very weird slash unsettling, but I do agree with everything Alan said. Despite everything I said before, I truly do agree with everything Alan said. You do have to have a line in the sand, and you can't just let it keep escalating. And if this is a line in the sand, which I don't really believe it will be, it's better than nothing. But I think, at the risk of repeating myself, they didn't, or maybe this is saying a new thing, I don't think they really identified the problem. And the problem, you know, Matt hits it a long way, and you do too, Alan, but that is not the problem. You're not going to abandon dunes and the par fives are obsolete. The problem is super, super narrow. It's golf on TV at the best courses in the world. And as Nick, I don't know the numbers that Nicholas cited, but Nicholas said, you know, there used to be, someone could help me here maybe, you know, there used to be 500 courses that could in the world that could hold major championships. Now there's 100, whatever the numbers are, but it's something on the order of that. And that's not good for golf. You know, these great old courses are worth preserving. And if they don't have legitimate par fives and, you know, two shot par fours, then they sort of, the game gets, it's a lesser game actually without the old courses and the Marions being meaningful.
Well, and it speaks to this, how this process was so messy, because, you know, Matt, you've been pretty forceful on social media that this is the wrong time for a rollback for the amateur golfer, as the game is exploding in popularity, as we're bringing all kinds of new people to the game. And the message now is, we want to make it harder for you. That's a bad message. You know, bifurcation was on the table. That would have made sense. You could have throttled back the pros as much as you want, and not messed with the rest of us. But the ball manufacturers didn't want that. And they control the players.
Because they
take their cues from the manufacturers who pay the bills. So the pros and the manufacturers killed bifurcation. And so then that sort of backed the USGA into a corner. Like, if we're going to do anything, it's got to be for everybody now. So it's ironic that we could have had a sensible solution that don't touch the amateurs, just deal with this very tiny subset of golfers who do smash the, you know, ungodly distances. But the manufacturers and the players killed that, the tour players. So now it's affecting all of us. But the crazy thing is, the PGA Tour and the PGA of America have kind of signaled they're not into this, and certainly LIV Golf is not going to be into it. So we may get into this bizarro world scenario where the professional circuits opt out of this, and they choose not to follow this rule, but it affects the amateurs. So only the pros have unchecked distance, but the amateurs are getting penalized. Like, that makes my brain hurt. There's a long way to get to that moment, but it's theoretically possible, and that's insanity.
Well, okay, all of that being said, and the USGA trying to ultimately protect, let's say, their championships, and the RNA trying to protect their Open Championship and venues. And why don't they just simply then get into the business of making a tournament ball, much like what people wanted Augusta to do several years ago at the Masters, to say, create a tournament ball and say, this is the ball you're going to have to play at my championship, or mid championships in the case of the RNA and the USGA, and say, in order to to play this championship, you have to play this ball. And then they're going, then you take the manufacturers out of the equation. You control your situation as it relates to your championships, which is the only place that any of this actually matters. And just isolate that situation and say, and do whatever you want. Make the rules that you want to have people to adhere to, and then let everybody else decide if that's something they want to do at their tournament, at their course, in their circumstances. Not unlike, you know, let's go all the way down to Goat Hill Park in the Wishbone Brawl, where John Ashworth says, in order to have the course record, you have to play persimmons, and the Wishbone Brawl is played with persimmons, and men play against women, and it's all, you know, like, there is ways to do this that simply, you know, blanket statements and doing these rule changes and rollbacks to the masses just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Seriously, let's get back. Why wouldn't they just do that and make ball? They're sitting on a piles of cash. They've used these championships to raise the money to you know, they have the money. Go make your own ball.
I mean, it makes sense, except they're the most important tournaments. And now if the players, you know, 25 weeks a year are using a different ball on the tour because they don't want to give up that competitive advantage because other guys are using it. Then you come to the Masters, the US Open, it's the most important championship. You got to learn this new ball. And it'd be fun. It'd be interesting. It'd be a great talking point. But
in baseball, you go to a different field. You got to hit it farther in right field. Then you have to go to left field. You've got, you know,
that's true. I mean, in tennis, you know, tennis is messed with the ball at different surfaces and different things. Like, it wouldn't be unprecedented. It would be a big deal. It would be a sea change. I mean, I would love
this
it.
This is a big deal. This is a big deal. We are talking about people who pay to play. You're making rules because of what you see based on people who get paid to play that impact the people who pay to play.
Well,
that's
valid.
A bad decision. This is your clientele. This is your customer. These are the people 30 years ago that you would have given anything to have them show up and pay to play this game. And they're here now. And we're going to shut the door on their face and say, sorry, I know the game is hard. It's really hard. That's why the game is so hard that things like Topgolf and par three courses and short courses and that's the actual trend that's happening right now. Sustainability issues. Well, guess what? The game is already shrinking. Grasses are improving. Potable water is going away, and more. The trend is to reclaim water to water these golf courses. So throw the sustainability stuff out, and it's going to correct itself by water prices and everything that else is involved. This is not the solution to anything related to sustainability. This is not the solution to grow the game and all the marketing efforts that you've put forward, governing bodies, to try to get us there. All of that is now a massive contradiction and a big unnecessary PR nightmare that we're all going to have to endure for the next TK coming years. And it's unnecessary. And it's driving me crazy because you know why? And I think we can all agree. We love this game. Why do we love this game? Because of the places it takes us, the people we meet, the relationships we forge, the experiences we have, the opportunities we have to have that camaraderie, community, and show up and also share it with the people who matter most, family, friends, our children, their children. So the reason why I want to grow the game and why I was so supportive of the grow the game efforts and why everyone got behind that movement is that very reason, because we want people to have the experiences that we've all been blessed to have relating to golf. If you suck the game of golf out of my life and all the relationships I've had because of golf, I'd have almost nothing. That's why I care about it. That's why I post. And that's why I want it to continue to grow, because golf creates good people. And good people is exactly what we need right now in this world. And if the person that's showing up and playing music too loud or is not conforming to the general etiquette of what the game is, guess what? We stop them and go, by the way, carts can't drive over the green. Oh, by the way, this is Goat Hill Park. This John Ashworth created this community. please don't just run over arbitrarily the signs that are saying parts this way. You coach them up. That's part of the process. The community kicks in and we right the ship and we correct the wrongs and we make better people because of it. Why is First Tee exist? Why does Youth on Course happen? Because we want kids in the game so that they can become better people. What are we doing?
Matt, I wish you had some passion on this subject.
This is madness. The governing bodies literally loaded a gun and just shot themselves in their own feet.
Well, okay, let me play devil's advocate here. I mean, for the beginning golfer, I agree that optically it's not a great message, but for people who just learn to play the game, who don't swing the club that hard, or will they probably won't even notice the difference when the ball goes back 5%. Well, that's the question. I mean, that's why bifurcation would have made sense. I think, you know, Michael, your point was that, and I like the Top Flight versus Pro V1. Maybe some of us would know the difference, but if we're talking about the beginners, they certainly wouldn't. They're just trying to find the club face. I mean, Michael, in your mind, what is the way forward? Like, where does the game go from this moment?
Well, the greatness about the four majors, when people actually do watch golf, unlike say Hartford and Waste Management is not a good example, but you know, the ordinary PGA Tour event or the ordinary live event, is that those events invited massive, massive audiences. And this dovetails with Madison. And when we watch ordinary golf, it's driver 8-iron or driver sandwich into so many par fours, and we can't relate because we're not doing that. But if those four, let's call it even five times a year, if the players got on board with it, if you did have a special ball for those events, it would make golf even more inviting because we, the public, and especially beginners, people new to the game, would relate even more to what they're doing on TV, because it would at least start to approach what we're doing, which isn't happening now. Now, the game is so bifurcated already, but they're not willing to admit it. You know, Rory McIlroy said that the other day. He said, "Do you think the clubs that I play and you play are the same? Of course not. They're so finely tuned to their exact needs. We go to Dick's Sporting Goods, we buy whatever the guy gives us or the person gives us." So I think I think the governing bodies didn't really, really identify the problem. The problem is not running out of land at 99% of the golf courses. It's this tiny sliver of courses where they are running out of land. They can't make the course long enough, and we can't really relate to what they're doing. And to your point, Alan, about, you know, would it be fair to make a guy play, you know, one ball 25 weeks a year? To Matt's point about, you know, you got a short porch, you know, Fenway and a different one at Yankee Stadium and Wrigley and all the rest, adjust. It would be another part of the challenge. So I think it would have been really neat. You know, of course, we're not old enough to remember it, but the stymie rule was once a thing. Can you imagine at one point, you know, people were like, can you believe they're going to get rid of the stymie rule? Now this next generation hasn't even heard of it. And why would they? So like, if you did something, quote, radical, like actually give the athlete a ball to use in these four or five different tournaments, it would seem crazy and outrageous for a while, and then it just wouldn't. It would just be normal. And of course, in every other sport, pretty much, except for bowling, that's what happens. The governing body, who's ever putting on the event, gives you a ball and says, go play. And even to the last thing, I know the manufacturers would go crazy about this, but you could even have, of course it would be expensive and blah, 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 but you could have the different manufacturers make the tournament ball that would be used in these four or five different tournaments. Okay, great. It can still get their name out there.
The other thing that drives me crazy just to say is like, why just the ball? Like, you know, let's roll back mowing. Let's blow back mowers and let's go to longer length fairways. Let's grow out rough. I mean, the pros don't like to play with long rough. So guess what? There's no more long rough anyway. They don't play in long rough. They don't really like it. They, you know, the pros are going to always just do this. This is a such a small set and an entertainment factory, and they're getting paid to put on a show. And what we think the show should be or could be or supposed to be, it doesn't matter if they don't go along with it. it's like you still need to get buy-in from them. And if you get buy-in from them, then it doesn't matter from us. And once they passed on it, then why is the solution then to go and pick on everybody, you know, everybody at school? Like, it just makes no sense to me.
They did address the fairway height in the report on the distance, and they said it was pretty negligible, 2 to 4 yards maybe. Longer fairway cut.
Yards for what they're saying,
right?
It is like, you know, almost a third of what they're actually proposing. So if you take fairway length, if you limit the loft in the club head and say, okay, you can only use 13 degrees and higher, you can't go down to an 8 degree loft. If you can only have a certain length of shaft, if you can only have a certain club head size, you know, why is it have anything really to do? You know, like, why do you just single out the ball and just say that's the issue? Hard and fast. We're seeing the ball roll 30 to 70 yards after it lands on these fairways.
Yeah, I think on some level, the ball is an easy scapegoat. If you wanted to get into the systemic issues, and you could go down a rabbit hole, you know, you could regulate tee height.
We are in that hole. This is where we are. This is where we're not going down the rabbit hole. We have been shoved into the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily. And that's also part of my frustration. You know, the professional game, as you guys both know, is an absolute shit show, dumpster fire, inside out, upside down, and backwards. It's just a like, to the point where people are tuning out and moving on. At a big rate. And now the governing bodies of the so-called quote masses are going to throw this grenade into that room.
Well, it does get interesting, because golf but louder does not really dovetail with shorter driving distances. So what LIV is going to do, and what the PGA Tour is going to do, and they don't have to be in lockstep, assuming this framework agreement blows up, even if it is consummated, like, they're not bound by, there's no nitty gritty in that they're gonna have to follow the same competition rules. So then you could, you know, what one tour does versus the other, to your point, Matt, it gets messy. I think, but Michael mentioned this earlier, I mean, professional golf on TV has never been more boring. And some of that is just the style of play. When they do go to, like, I think it, like that old Donald Ross course outside Detroit, I mean, the guys are hitting wedge into every single hole. It's just so boring, because you give a pro a wedge, either they're going to hit a great shot or a good shot. There's no danger. You know, either they're going to be 30 feet, or they're going to be 5 feet, but the range of outcomes is so small. That's why I like bifurcation. I like the more severe rollback, where the game becomes more interesting to watch.
And I was for bifurcation, just for the record. I'm for bifurcation. Do whatever, you know, like, do whatever you want to do to the pros and get them on board.
And that to me is such a miss here, is, you know, the PGA Tour helped kill it. I mean, they're still writing letters to the USGA. They're still pushing back. It's their product that's suffering. I mean, their product has never been more anodyne and more just, it's just predictable.
But it's their product. You know what I mean? Like, look at the NFL. What a mess the NFL is. But it's their product. Like, they're going to have to address the tush push. Like, that's, Calvin Johnson came along. He was really tall and he was unguardable. Randy Moss was an elite athlete who was basically unstoppable for a chunk of time. I mean, Tom Brady won played in seven Super Bowls. Like, what, does that mean we just have, like, what are we doing? We just sort of react based on everything that continues to happen at the elite level. And the difference here being is that you're making decisions that affect the people who pay to play. What if you put polls in front of everybody's, you know, seats in the grandstands of people who are watching football and say, we're going to make it harder for you to watch the game that you're paying to play.
Matt, what would you answer to this question? If, let's say, Mike Wan and Slumbers and Fred Ridley called you, Zoom call just like this one, they said, Matt, you've been around the game all your life. What do you see as the issue with the game right now, as it relates to this one narrow thing, how far the golf ball goes?
I don't see it. I do not.
Didn't do the problem at all.
I just don't see it. Buddy's trip, we have on our annual buddy's trip, we have a range of plus handicaps to 24 handicaps. If anything, distance is an issue for the greater majority of the people on the trip in terms of the ball doesn't go far enough. And the golf, you go play Lido right now from the forward tees. And if you shoot your handicap, I'll send you a hat. Right now, go play the Lido at Sand Valley. And you think you're going to go out there and overpower that golf course? This is one of the old classics that was built to be a tough golf course. Like, you know, I don't see it. I don't see it anywhere. I don't see it at Torrey Pines. I don't see it at Bethpage. I don't see it. The distance is not an issue unless we turn on the TV and we think we're going to ask ourselves. And if you're at a private club and distance is an issue, maybe you have an issue with an architecture of that golf course or where that bunker was originally. Like, really? There's enough people in your membership at your private club that you all pay to play that this is a problem that should in somehow impact the masses? Do whatever you want at your club. Do whatever you want at the PGA Tour. But for the people who rock up at Goat Hill Park, 4,500 yards, par 65, 8 par 3s, you know what the issue is? It's golf is too hard. That's the issue. So anything we're doing to make it harder makes no sense. And it's going to affect the bottom line at that little mini municipal who's fighting for its life to try to get more people to rock up and pay to play.
Alan, what do you think, Alan? What do you think? Like, my contention is they haven't really been forthright about what they think the problem is. But what's your take, Alan?
Are you talking about the ruling bodies as the they? Yeah.
What do they think the problem is really, whether they're saying it publicly or not?
Yeah, I mean, Matt touched on it. The problem is that the two tournaments that are being most affected by the distance explosion is the US Open and the British Open, because they're locked into these old traditional venues that have gotten so short. And we have a measuring stick. You know, you go back to the old course every 5 years, you can see, you know, no one's hitting driver off 18 anymore because it's too short. And at the old course, I mean, it's a three wooded computer. In 5 years, they're going to be, you know, Ludwig Hebert and Gordon Sargent are going to be hitting three irons and driving the green.
So, like, quickly, I would definitely add Augusta National to that list.
Augusta, too.
Everybody and their mother reaches eight now. Nobody. Yeah.
So that is the issue for the governing bodies. They've been asleep at the wheel for decades. Distances have gone unchecked. And where it's most obvious is at their most important championships. And so I think they're embarrassed. Like, you know, they play the old course, they put tees on the Eden and the new course and in OB areas and all this ridiculousness just to try and make it something like the shot values that have always been there. So that's what I think. That's what I think is driving this, is they have egg on their face every year when it's clear that their malfeasance and their ineptitude has allowed the professional game to run amok. And so they have to do something because of their own championships. It's only 2 weeks a year.
Just for 4 or 5 weeks a year.
Yeah.
Like, no LPGA event feels that way that I could imagine.
No way.
Now, the TPC Sawgrass course, they would probably identify with all of that. I mean, 18, can you imagine guys playing 18 with a 3-iron and a 6-iron, which they do? You know, you hit a 3-iron, you hit right down the right side, there's a book spin, and then you hit a cut 6-iron in there. I mean, that's not what Pete Dye wanted. Okay, Alan, I think that Alan, based on what you just said, we're totally on the same page. So on that basis, I'm with you with the line in the sand. But why not just, as Matt and I have both been saying, why not just have a golf ball for these 4 or 5 weeks a year?
It's certainly feasible. And now that's going to be the only solution. Since they've officially punted on bifurcation as a governing principle, then the tournament ball becomes the last hope. I think you said it well, Michael. It seems crazy, but then after a couple of years, it's not a big deal. And you know, when I coached high school basketball, we use a certain kind of basketball all year long. We get to the CCS playoffs, they have a deal with a different manufacturer. They hand you this ball pregame. It feels weird. it doesn't dribble the same. The girls don't like it. Well, too bad. This is the ball we're using. You got 15 minutes of warmups to get used to it and you go play. It's still a round ball that bounces. So, I mean, it exists in sports, like, but
that is sport right there. It's like when Phil complained about the 270-yard par three at Marion. Who cares? It was 270 for everybody. You knew it was done right there.
College baseball players play their whole lives with metal bats, and in order to make the pros, they have to adjust to a wooden bat. Let's pull the caddies. Okay, let's go to St. Andrews in the old course and ask the caddies if we think we need to roll the ball back to make the old course more relevant. Let's go to Pebble Beach and ask the caddies if we think this is a good idea to roll the ball back for the people who are rocking up and playing Pebble Beach. I know for a fact that the caddies at Sand Valley dread the idea that they're going to have to caddy for these amateurs at the Lido on a daily basis and have to witness the carnage that's going to be displayed out there for all these people who love the architecture. And I'm playing one of these classic old golf courses and they're making putting out for sixes, sevens, eights. Please pick it up. You're making a nine. Please. It's over. Let's go and talk to the caddies about which course they like to caddy at Bandon Dunes more. Is it Pacific Dunes or is it Sheep Ranch? This is
So, okay, this is where we've come to in this podcast. We all three of us agree they should have bifurcated. They didn't. So now an interesting question becomes, what happens in 7 years? Like, will the golfers rebel? Will they just opt out? You know, none of us are playing in big time amateur events. We're just playing with our friends. So when you get to the first tee in January 1st, 2030, do you say, boys, you know, I've got some Pro V1s that are a year and a half old. I'm going to use them. I don't know what you got. You know, like it's just like when we play, we grant each other mulligans occasionally. There's certainly gimmies. Like all of us have our own low key interpretation of the rules as it is now. So what do you think? Will the average golfer embrace the new dead ball? Or in mass, are we just going to vote with our pocketbooks and ignore the rule? Like, what's going to happen?
People are going to be, I don't care. People are going to be, I don't care. You know, I've been playing these I2s. I don't know if they're legal or not. I think they are. I think they're grandfathered in. I don't care. Now, if I was actually playing in something where someone cared, it's okay. Well, if you care, then I care. But otherwise, I don't care.
No one's going to care. Well, I mean, so Matt, you organize an annual buddies trip. People know about the Uncle Tony Invitational. Michael, you have an annual gathering called the Shivas, where you bring together, you know, a couple dozen guys to play. So what is going to happen in 2030? Are you going to have to specify to you this motley crew of friends who come from all over the country, have different backgrounds in golf, different handicaps, different worldviews? Are you going to say what ball they have to use?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the answer is no. And to your point, Alan, you know, this word bifurcate, it seems to be like the one dressed up, you know, tiger loves the word. It's been using it for years. Like people seem to know what the word is, but the word is so abused. The game is not bifurcate. We just play a totally different game. My little thing, you know, that has all sort of his quirks as well. In my thing, you can't make worse than triple. There's nothing in the rule book says you can't make worse than triple. But in my thing, you can't make worse than triple. And the whole handicap system is the whole entire handicap system is, quote, bifurcated because you're supposed to turn in a stroke play score where putts are routinely given. Those two things don't go in hand.
Right.
Given the gimme is a real thing in match play, and it's totally an anomaly, or not anomaly, it's anathema to stroke play competition, yet you combine the two. So the governing bodies have done a very poor job of explaining that there really are two different games. And I think that's a starting point. Regarding 7 years from now, I don't think anyone's gonna care. But go ahead.
Well, this is a thought exercise, Matt. 2030 Uncle Tony Invitational. Hopefully I'm there. Let's say
hopefully I'm there.
Yeah. So we won't name any names like Kevin Price, but we have some hardos who like really follow the rules of golf and are really into that. So some of the guys come up to the Uncle Tony, they have the dead balls. I say, you know what? I'm not down with the USGA. I'm using my old ball. Gives me an advantage. I win the Uncle Tony Invitational. Some guys are pissed off because I use an old ball and I had an advantage. Like, you as the commissioner, how are you going to deal with that?
I kick people out for not wanting music. You know, I kick people out for, you know, bringing champagne instead of wine or tequila like that. You know, I kick people out for complaining about who they're paired with. Like, I'm not kicking people out for, you know, we go to Bandon Dunes and we play the 6,200 yard tees and we let the uncles, you know, go all the way up where, you know, play from wherever you want to essentially play from. I'm doing everything I can to try to make this more fun. I always say my first advice to any alpha planner of a buddy's trip is play down to your lowest common denominator, essentially in terms of budget. You got to make sure you don't price people out of the destination. You want to make sure everybody comes along. You want to have the highest handicappers be able to have a chance to have fun and win. I don't cater to like the 2 or 3+ handicaps on the trip and let the rest of the people suffer the consequences. In fact, I let the lowest handicappers play from where the forward tees so that we don't bifurcate the camaraderie of the event by having those guys go all the way to the back tees and us having to wait for them to hit. And then we all wait and then we then hit. And, oh, I forgot. Sorry. We have one more. I didn't know you have to hit. Like, I'm trying to accommodate the group, the masses, because everybody is paying to be there. And if the good players end up shooting 65 instead of 69, I don't really give a shit. I say that's really well played. Ollie Dunn is a pro, is an exceptional player. He has struggled the last few years. He got his game in gear. He had 4 rounds in the 60s, including on the Lido, which is great golf. And he won the tournament. As you know, he and his partner, Andrew Fleming, at a 5 or 6 handicap, won the tournament. They beat all the net players because they played the best golf. I don't really give a shit. And I, going back to the tournament ball and the USGA and the RNA, taking the pile of cash that they're all sitting on that they've been taking for all the entrants and all the people who paid to be a part of these tournaments and all the merchandise that's been sold, making a tournament ball and throwing up a purse of $20 million or however much millions of dollars they put in terms of a purse for the United States Open and hoist that big trophy and have one of the majors, they are sitting with the leverage and the power because they've got the money for those events. If they set a price of what you're playing for, and this is the US Open and it's a major championship, but you have to play this tournament ball that we've created, people would play it. And if the players don't want to play it, they don't play it. Make it about that small slice and ignore the rest of us and leave us alone.
So we have an emerging consensus on this podcast. They should have bifurcated. They didn't. Now they should go to a tournament ball. And the thing that's interesting is if they were to do that, that would be great for Goat Hill because and shorter courses, because not everybody wants to buy persimmons or has access to persimmons, but you could go to Goat and you play the tournament ball. And now instead of 4,500 yards, it plays more like 5,500. And essentially, you know, you could take these deader balls to par three courses like Golden Gate Park, hit more club if you want to. Like I was actually on Grand Cayman, like I think I was in high school and I played the Cayman ball on that little course. And it was like, it was fun. You know, you're playing a 80 yard hole and you're hitting a 3-wood or whatever. And I mean, as we've been celebrating all these par three courses, like I think if you had this tournament ball that you could be mass marketed for shorter courses, that could be fun. It just adds a whole other wrinkle.
I mean, people, I walk up to go with Friday skins, guys put in $20. Some guys play persimmons, some guys don't. Todd Dempsey right now, as we're talking in this conversation, through one round of the PGA Tour Champions Q School, is 4 under par. He's playing the Q School with persimmons that he made, that he made, handcrafted. Todd Dempsey, legend, Arizona State. Like this guy is like a bona fide badass. He rolled it back himself and he's competing with the rest. Rollback is there if you want it. You want it? Go take it. Have at it. roll it back, do whatever you want until you're blue in the face. I could care less. Leave us alone.
Do you happen to know what ball he's using?
No.
If he's using a gutta percha, I'll be really impressed.
It's not a
feather. All right. Well, it's an interesting topic, and it gets people fired up, as listeners have heard on this podcast. Especially one person.
Where are you going in Australia?
Oh yeah, we should mention that. It's Wednesday late morning here in California. I'm going to be driving to SFO here in a little bit, and I'm going to be flying to Melbourne, Australia, for Jeff Ogilvie and Michael Clayton's Sandbelt Invitational. One of the coolest little tournaments in golf. We've been covering it the last couple of years on firepitcollective.com. I was just doing it from afar. We had some video guys who were on site, but I'm making the trip this year. I will be doing daily dispatches, fun stuff on social, try and wrangle a few homies for a podcast perhaps. And, I'll tweet it out. Matt and I and a couple other our friends did the ultimate golf trip, probably in the history of golf trips, right before COVID hit. And we did Melbourne and Tasmania and King Island that's in between. And it was epic. Also New Zealand. I can't believe we did that in 8 days. And Melbourne's just one of the all-time great destinations. So I'm excited. I'll bring my golf clubs. I'm going to be a little busy, but hopefully I can sneak in some golf. And it's going to be a fun time. And I hope people follow along, because if you haven't paid attention, the Sandbelt Invitational, it brings together pros and amateurs, men and women, some old Aussie legends, or seniors now playing it. So it's multi-generation. It's just, they play a different course every day. Royal Melbourne, Kingston Heath, Peninsula Kingwood, which is a neoclassic. And the fourth venue rotates this year. It's Victoria, where there's a statue of Peter Thompson by the first tee waiting to pass judgment on your tee shot. And great golf course, super fun place. Last night of our trip, we stayed in the clubhouse there, and they have some rooms, and the members kind of knew we've been on social media for weeks playing all these golf courses. And so they were happy we were there. And one of the most fun nights I've ever had in golf travel, because they were so welcoming and wanted to hear all our tall tales. So I'm looking forward to getting back to Victoria, and, it's gonna be good fun. Thanks for mentioning that, Michael. I appreciate that.
That shows you how much sway Clayton and Ogilvie have in the game. When you cite those courses, I mean, for people who don't know golf in Australia, that's Marion and Seminole and Augusta National and Cyprus, practically.
Melbourne is like taking the best of Philadelphia, the best of Chicago, the best of San Francisco, and the best of New York, and putting them all in, like, within driving distance, like within a very short amount. It's an embarrassment of rich. They have so many. They can rotate for the next few years, and you'd never have to play the same one over and over again. Victoria, I got the chance to stay at Victoria Golf. We stayed in those little rooms above the clubhouse. I mean, it's such an incredible golf course, and the way that those fairways cut into those greens, and there's, and then on into those bunker. It's
so art. Pure.
It is so pure.
Well, and just
a quick aside here, but it relates to our theme. When Tiger played as the playing captain in that, I think, 2019 President's Cup, the shots that he played there were so inventive and so much more interesting than, the smash mouth golf that we're accustomed to seeing, I'd say at Hartford. I'm not picking on Hartford, but that's what they do there. It's a long, it's a short soft course. But it was just interesting. And, maybe it's a function of my age and the kind of golf I grew up watching that, I'm so drawn to that kind of golf. But I don't know how anybody couldn't say that's not better golf. And that's the joy of the old course, and really should be the joy of Augusta National, especially when it's dry at all, is to see guys pay fiddly, finesse, difficult shots out of difficult lies, and the ball moves. So anyway, Alan, have a great, great trip. But I think that's on the point of that golf gets more interesting when the ball is not so hot. I just want to wrap up one quick thought here, because I feel like maybe I've been too harsh on the governing bodies. Because Alan, I really do agree with that first thing you said. You did have to do something, and this is doing something. And I do think it's a good thing that they're doing it, and they are giving a lot of lead time. But, and it's a major but, it's not going to do anything for the real issue that I think facing golf, which is, are these great courses from yesteryear going to become relics? I think that's really the honest to God issue. And I think they have not really been willing to say that out loud.
I just want, I want to clear up one little factoid. Tom Brady played in 10 Super Bowls, won 7 of them in his 20 years. And we celebrate his greatness. Steph Curry is, you know, revolutionizing the game of basketball. And we celebrate Steph Curry's greatness. LeBron James, Wilt Chamberlain, you know, scored 100 points and they didn't raise the rim. Like, I just, what sort of always kind of half bugs me about the game of golf is we can never be satisfied and just simply celebrate greatness without overreacting and tiger proofing or, you know, rolling back the ball. Like, it just, for whatever reason, we can't just simply say that's amazing. Congratulations.
And just a quick thought on that, Matt, this proves how genius, not really, the golf governing bodies can be, is they got tiger proofing totally wrong.
Exactly.
The only guy who got it right was Nick Price. If you want to tiger proof, go to 6,600 yards.
Less is more. It's the answer to this has always been, shorter is the answer, not necessarily for the ball, but for the courses and the architecture and the turn points, and make them be more accurate. And I'm bummed. I love golf. I know we all love golf. Anybody who's listening right now still loves golf. And this to me is a bruise on the game.
I don't agree with that. I don't think this is any sort of crisis. I think it's more like a nothing.
It's unnecessary.
It's kind of an own goal. Well, I'm just going to wrap up by saying that I hope I'm still
here
alive.
Comes Michael Clayton, by the way.
No. Yeah. Don't let him in. Leave him in the waiting room.
Yeah. I got to run, guys.
Well, why don't we, Alan, why don't we let Michael go and let's say hello to Michael Clayton?
All right. Okay. We're going to swap out one Michael for another.
Yes.
Dr. Bamberger, thank you.
See you, guys.
Great fun.
Yes. Oh, my God. All right. I'm going to patch Michael Clayton in. He's coming on as Bamberger is saying goodbye. We're trading one Michael for another. We're going from Philly to Melbourne. Quite an exciting thing, but we're going to actually stop this podcast down. If you care to listen to Conversation with Michael Clayton, that'll be part two of our rollback conversation.
I bet big and I played to win. Made a fortune when my ship came in. I ran the table, never thought I could fall. Then the winter time hit me like a cannonball. And now I can't shake this losing streak. Every road I take is a dead end street. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.